Hare Rama Hare Namaste Sasvati Devi Govani Pachayane Nivashesha Shunyavari Vashatara Shatarine Panchakopa Janupasha Kripasa Nivevacha Paditanam Pavanevya Vaishnavevyo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Bhava Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasudi Govani Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so welcome everybody to the afternoon session of day number 2. So you're ready for more?
Yes.
You didn't eat too much and get too sleepy or something? No. Good. All right, so maybe let us just start with our good number 2. Where's good number 2? Okay.
Again,
yes.
Who will fix it next 100 years?
Are we mad?
Probably.
You are for nothing. I got to call house master.
Fine. You know what?
What?
Do it yourself. I'll go to the bar with my friend.
I'm not crazy. I'll throw it away through the window. No improvisation.
Remember the last time?
Yes.
Nobody in the office knew the solution to the problem.
Yes.
And you were the one. So I have changed me with the faith in
Krishna.
Okay, so before we continue, I do want to read to you one really strong purport.
I just got lunch.
What did you say?
We are not ready for
Gary. No, you'll be able to digest. After you digest in the morning, you can digest everything. I mentioned yesterday, I also have a course, Marriage and Spiritual Culture. And in this course, I have this one purport, so it's not in your materials. I actually should put it in those materials also. But it does give some answer to some questions that came up in regards to abuse, you know, how much to tolerate, and so on. This is Bhagavatam 9, 9th canto, 3rd chapter, verse number 10. This is with Chavanamuni and Sukanya. For those who cannot remember the story, Chavanamuni is some old, cranky, ugly, irritable man, Muni. And Sukanya is this very young, beautiful princess. So, the verse says, Chavanamuni was very irritable, but since Sukanya had gotten him as her husband, she dealt with him carefully, according to his mood. Knowing his mind, she performed service to him without being bewildered. So now comes Prabhupada's most excellent purport. Listen very carefully. This is an indication of the relationship between husband and wife. A great personality like Chavanamuni has the temperament of always wanting to be in a superior position. A great personality has that mood. It almost, you know, according to Prabhupada, it also almost seems to be natural. Yeah. Such a person cannot submit to anyone. Therefore, Chavanamuni had an irritable temperament. His wife, Sukanya, could understand his attitude, and under the circumstances, she treated him accordingly. So now it comes. If any wife wants to be happy with her husband, any wife, not only Sukanya or something, but if any wife wants to be happy with her husband, she must try to understand her husband's temperament and please him. This is victory for a woman. Even in the dealings of Lord Krishna with his different queens, it has been seen that although the queens were the daughters of great kings, they placed themselves before Lord Krishna as his maid servants. Of course, we can say, well, they had Krishna as a husband. So if I had Krishna as a husband, then I could do that too. But no, it's simply the principle. Whether he's like Krishna or not, you know, the principle is there. However great a woman may be, she must place herself before her husband in this way. That is to say, she must be ready to carry out her husband's orders and please him in all circumstances. Then her life will be successful. When the wife becomes as irritable as the husband, their life at home is sure to be disturbed or ultimately completely broken. Now it comes again. In the modern day, the wife is never submissive. And therefore, home life is broken even by slight incidents. Wow. Prabhupada knows exactly what's going on. That's what he says. In the modern day, the wife is never submissive. And therefore, home life is broken even by slight incidents. Mm. Yes, you got it right. Very important sentence. Either the wife or the husband take advantage of the divorce laws. According to the Vedic law, however, there is no such thing as divorce laws. And a woman must be trained to be submissive to the will of her husband. Oh, so heavy. Westerners contend that this is a slave mentality for the wife. But factually, it is not. It is the tactic by which a woman can conquer the heart of her husband, however irritable or cruel he may be. Wow, that's a strong statement. You know, it's the tactic by which a wife can conquer the heart of her husband, however irritable or cruel he may be. I mean, cruel is a very strong word. A cruel person is a person who gets pleasure from torturing other living entities. He's cruel. Huh? So, you know, this is the power of the feminine energy. Even if her husband is cruel, if she learns the tactic of putting herself below him like a humble maid servant and pleasing him in all regards, she can conquer his heart. So that's right. That's what he says. Right? So we have to take it seriously, you know? In this case, we clearly see that although Chavanamuni was not young, but indeed old enough to be Sukanya's grandfather, and was also very irritable, Sukanya, the beautiful young daughter of a king, submitted herself to her old husband and tried to please him in all respects. And thus she was a faithful and chaste wife. You know, Prabhupada checked in, there's so many things, you know.
Even it is cruel to her.
Of course.
What if he almost kill her or something?
Well.
Okay.
See, the point is, it is all a question of internal attitude, you know? It's not a cheap thing to really put yourself below. It's not an external thing. Yeah, what else do you want? I'm cooking you lunch already. Your stomach is fine. You know, that's not going to do the job. That's not going to conquer his heart. No. Really internally putting below. As Prabhupada said, in the Western world, women are never submissive. We have not learned this. We have not been trained in this. We don't even know what it means.
We don't have examples.
Yes, yes, yes. We don't have role models. You know? That's a problem. So, as I'm saying, it's going to take several generations to get back there, you know. But let's first understand the principle. Yeah, let's understand the principle of Krishna's system and also understand how far we have gone off already. Yeah. But in other words, you know, let's clearly understand this is the wife's powerful feminine energy, that through her service she conquers the husband's heart, which means then he will not be cruel in the first place. That's the point, basically. You know? Unless he is completely emotionally screwed up and mad or something, you know? But if we learn the tactic, we learn the art, no, We conquer his heart. Why should he be cruel? He will not. That's the power of the feminine energy. You know, but we have to understand deeply, you know, what it means. It does not mean just externally, all right, I do as you say, okay. You know, no. That's just an external show there of submission. It has to be in the heart. And a man can feel. You know, consciousness is a very powerful energy. You know, it emanates from every pore of your skin. You can feel if this is real submission or if we just make some show here, you know. Man can feel. Yes. Just some food for thought here. Yes. Again, you know, the false ego does not like to hear such things, and it is rebelling and, you know. But well, Prabhupada puts it in the Bhagavatam. You know, law book for the next 10,000 years. And it's very clear, you know, it's very clear. Even about this, I once wrote an article, you know, and put this quote on Tandavats, you know. And then so many comments came back. Yes, this is only with Sukanya and Chavamani and this. No, come on, let's see what Prabhupada is saying here, you know. He speaks any wife, if any wife wants to be successful. It's very clear, you know. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Anyway, I simply wanted to share that, even though it is part of marriage and spiritual culture. Because see, this course, Women and Spiritual Culture, it just sets the foundation, it gives the principles. And then marriage and spiritual culture, we go a little bit into the details, more of attitude of the husband, attitude of the wife. And it is actually on the website now, you can download it. But I'm also looking at other cultural aspects of family life, not only this husband-wife relationship, but purifying duties, importance of receiving guests, feeding them, this, that, you know, there's so many things which are all lost and forgotten, you know. Yeah. All right. Are there any quick questions about this? Without getting too much into details, how long should we tolerate this, that, you know? No, let's just stick to the principles. Let's just understand Krishna's system, you know? Yes?
Thank you. Can I ask, I'm sorry if we mentioned and I didn't catch, what is with female only way of advancement through men? It is said in a couple of places in scriptures that woman is advancing only through serving men.
Yes. Well, see, Krishna's system for dissolving the false ego for those living entities in a woman's body is by putting herself below men. That's Krishna's system. Not only in marriage, but especially in marriage and in all dealings with men, you know? That's how we free ourselves. As we said, we practice on the men how to become humble servant, you know? And how to dissolve the false ego. So what's the system for the men? How do they get rid of their false ego?
Taking care of whom?
Submitting to the guru.
With other men.
Very true, very good. You must have heard it on the lectures, right? She's cheating. Yes, in cooperation with other men. That's how the men dissolve their ego. Very clear. You know, if a man's purifying duty is to take charge, his nature is he wants to lead. So you imagine many men are there, they all want to take charge and lead. You're going to have a clash, you're going to have a problem, you know. So, in cooperation with other men, that's where they learn humble serving. Even out there in the working world, you know, getting bashed around in competition with other men and their ego goes, you know, beaten, you know. And actually we can say the men's deal is much more difficult because they have that purifying duty of leading and taking charge and protecting, but without false ego, as humble servant. That's difficult. That's a challenge. Huh? Yes, you imagine. You have to lead, but not with that ego drive there, you know? Yeah, that's much more difficult. But we women actually have an easier job, you know? Because already, you know, by the nature of our purifying duties, you know, it is that subservient mood of following and serving and assisting and giving our energy much more easier. Yes, eh? So now to get a little bit more back to your question. Yeah, basically it is like that, you know, that by putting herself below a man, especially a husband, a woman cultivates that humble service mood. And no offense to anybody here who maybe is not married or something, but it is a fact that when we have never been married, often we have a hard time putting ourselves below, you know? Often there is an ego problem there because we simply haven't had that opportunity to cultivate submission. I see. And also often Prabhupada even says that women by nature, I think we read it later or tomorrow, by nature women are self-interested, which also has a reason. What's the reason? Why are women by nature self-interested? Thinking of Krishna's system, there's a reason there. Why are women by nature self-interested?
Because also
for
to collect things so that they can provide for the children.
Yes. So, you know, my house, my children, it's Prabhupada explains it as extended selfishness. So, a woman, in order to fulfill her duty of being the caretaker there in the family, she needs a certain amount of self-interest. Otherwise, you know, she would have no food for the kids and nothing to wear and, oh, it's cold and no socks and, you know. Yes, so that's why this nature is there, built in to the female vehicle. But if it is not used in that way of serving the family within Krishna consciousness, then it gets purified. But if that's not there, then very easily that self-interest becomes stronger and stronger manifest. And people just become more self-centered and selfish. Yeah? Yes. So it's all part of Krishna's system, you know, that we women are meant to go through this process for purification. So, and then, especially if the husband is a devotee, well, then she does not only get that benefit of, you know, cultivating submissiveness and letting go of the false ego, but she also gets benefit by serving him. Well, that principle is there in any service. If we serve Guru, if we serve Sadhu, we get some spiritual benefit there. We take part in their spiritual advancement a little bit, you know. So and husband and wife also, you know. So that's why all these reasons together make it very clear that as a rule, you know, of course there might be exceptions, whatever, this, that, but as a rule, for a woman, the main way to advance is by serving a man, a husband. No. Sorry. Not you to it now. Yeah? Clear?
Thank you.
Yeah, these things often get, you know, in a very shallow way we understand these things, very shallow, you know? That we say, yeah, as a woman, but only by serving a husband she can make progress. People don't really understand more deeply what it actually means, you know? And in a very shallow and superficial way, it just gets, gets propagated, and people don't understand, people cannot accept, you know, like that. Yeah. Okay, I would like to move on now to the power of the female energy. Some small chapter to conclude the second session. So, I think we have heard many times, maybe turn the loudspeaker touch to the side, no, to the side, because it does, no, other side, yes, it does, yeah, that's enough probably. It does backfeed there sometimes with some noise, you know? Yeah. So, I'm sure we have all heard many times how women are Maya. Right? Another one of those cliche, shallow things, you know? So, of course, women are not Maya. Women are spirit souls like all other entities. But the point is, Krishna has given this female form a very powerful energy. Very, very powerful. Women's energy is so much more powerful than men's energy. So much more. So, and the female energy has the potency, you know, depending on how we use that feminine energy, we can use it to become the source of, auspicious source of energy and inspiration, and we follow in the footsteps of Srimati Radharani, and we become a little Lakshmi Devi there in the house, you know? Or we can follow in the footsteps of Durga Devi and enjoy that the fact of this energy and bewilder everybody and lead everybody to hell. You know, so we have that choice. That's the point. You know. So, and Krishna has given that energy to the women. He has to give it to somebody, you know, in order to make the world go round and round and round. Yeah, you know. So he's chosen the female form, basically, you know, and depending on how we use it, we can either, you know, uplift and bring the best out of a man, or we can degrade the whole world, basically. Yeah. Yes. Chanakya Pandit says, women have hunger twofold, shyness fourfold, daring sixfold, and lust eightfold as compared to men. So of course, this one verse in itself is enough material for another seminar. I simply put it in there just to show how we women are in everything much stronger double, four times, six times, eight times. It just gives an indication how this feminine energy is so much more powerful. You know? Just one quick little comment about the lust being eightfold. You know, men's lust, woman's lust, simply different manifests differently. Men's lust manifests more in gross terms of sex desire. Women's lust manifests more subtle. Women are more envious, women are more competitive. Yes, much more. And, you know, there's more attachment to body and beauty and comfortable, comfort, this, that, you know? So let us read some little examples from the Shastra which illustrates the power of the feminine energy. 525 in the Bhagavatam. You can follow up if you like. Another example is Prince Agnidra, whose attention was drawn to the movements of Purvachiti, the Apsara, simply because he heard the tinkling of her ankle bells. In the same way that Vishvamitra Muni was attracted by the tinkling bangles of Menaka, Prince Agnidra, upon hearing the tinkling bangles of Purvachiti, immediately opened his eyes to see her beautiful movements as she walked. So there's many examples like that in the Chastra, where a woman just by lifting her eyebrows or tinkling with some bangles or ankle belts, she makes a great saintly person lose his mind, right? We never hear stories the other way around, right? Where, unless it's Krishna playing the flute or something, you know, that a man by some tinkling there, a woman is falling down or something. We never hear that. And not only that, also, of course, if you just take some ankle belts and tinkle, it will not be the same effect, you know. So it's not actually this tinkling sound of the ankle belts. If a man takes the same ankle belts and just tinkles with them, no other man will fall down, you know. Yes, yes. But it is actually the feminine energy traveling on the sound of that tinkling. That's what's making him fall down. Not just the tinkling noise. Right? Yes, yes, yes. Actually, one Indian-bodied Mataji was once making this comment and saying that actually the reason why women were wearing bangles was so that the men could hear, attention, there is woman coming. Like beeping the horn before you go around the corner in the car, you know? Yes, because, you know, in the early days there was no electricity, there was just some oil lights, you know, and they were moving around. So, when a man could hear, oh, there's some tinkling from the kitchen coming, he knew, oh, there's a woman there, I better don't go there now. You know? Interesting, isn't it? I didn't know that. That's what it was, pretty sweet, sweet little detail.
What? Maharaj also mentioned the same thing to my god sister. She's always...
I actually remember, now when you're saying it, when I was a Grihastha, I was also wearing bangles, and I also sometimes was making a bit of noise there just to make people understand, you know, there's a woman there or something. Yeah, I remember. Yes. So let's read the next one. This is even more funny. 322.17. The Gandhava Vishvavasu, while flying in the sky, could see Devahuti playing ball on the roof of the palace. Ball playing was also current But aristocratic girls would not play in a public place. Ball playing and other such pleasures were not meant for ordinary women and girls. Only princesses like Devahuti could indulge in such sports. It is described here that she was seen from the flying airplane. This indicates that the palace was very high. Otherwise, how could one see her from an aeroplane? The vision was so distinct that the Gandharva Vishravasu was bewildered by her beauty and by hearing the sound of her ankle bells. And by being captivated by the sound and beauty, he fell down. Kadama Muni mentioned the incident as he had heard it. So the scenario is like this: Devahuti, you know, as a small girl, playing on the palace rooftop, playing ball, and Vishravasu comes past there in his airplane, looking, and he's not only falling down, but he's actually literally falling out of his airplane. Yes. So, again, I don't think we have the other example. You know, some man playing basketball there, even if he only has a gumshoe on and he's not even dressed properly. I don't really think this is going to have such a bewildering effect or something. Right? No. Because female male energy is just not that powerful. It's not. Yes. So, from this we can understand, you know, that actually the atmosphere within a temple or within society at large very much depends on the consciousness of the women. Right? Because of women's energy being so powerful. And I have this experience also when I travel, that you can immediately see in a temple, if the women are nicely behaved and they're chaste and they, you know, they know the culture, then the whole atmosphere is pure and nice. But if the women are loose, they don't dress properly, they're all loud and making a show there, and then the whole atmosphere is contaminated. That's the power of female energy, you see. So we can say, to go back to the question, who is leading? Well, actually it is the women leading through their powerful energy. They are determining the whole atmosphere because women's energy is so much more powerful. So if a woman is in bad consciousness, if a woman behaves badly, screams and you know, this has is much more unpleasant than when a man behaves badly. All right, man, anybody can tolerate. You know, not such power behind it. But if a woman makes a whole drama and screams and or shows off or something, much more contaminating. Isn't it? Yes, yes. Practical application of the philosophy, right? Yes, yes. So really the atmosphere depends on the consciousness of the women. Definitely. Yes. So in that sense, the women are actually leading in society. Yes. The men lead up front, the women lead through their energy. Yeah. Perfectly Krishna's arrangement there of the whole system, you know. Yes. So I came up with a little analogy which most people appreciate. Also, since I'm coming from medical background, I used to work as a physiotherapist in Germany and rehabilitation and so on. So I know the spine is that part of the body which really keeps the body upright and straight. It's actually, one can say, the most important part of the body in many ways. You know, if your spine is broken and finished, you can't do much at all. You see? So the spine really upholds the body nice and straight, well functioning. It's the spine. So, but where is the spine? It's in the back. Yes. 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 And that is basically position of women. See? The women really, you know, they are like the spine to humanity. They keep whole humanity upright and straight and balanced and well functioning. It's the women. But where is she? She is in the back. She's working from behind through her energy. You see? So now you imagine in the body, if the spine wants to be in the front, if the spine goes on a strike and says, that's not fair, you know, I'm so important, I should be in the front, then the whole body is topsy-turvy and upside down, right? You imagine, spine wants to be in the front, you know. Yes. So this is actually going on in today's society, you know, that the spine wants to be in the front. And that puts the whole body upside down, the whole body of humanity upside down. See? Nice little analogy to remember. So we can say the men are like the head, women are like the spine. Interdependence. The head can't function much without a spine. He needs the spine, but the spine also can't really function much without the head. You know? Right? Okay, do we have any question about this? I think there's never a time where you don't have a question, is there?
Curious.
Let me first see if there's anybody else who is almost as curious as you are.
Since you're very experienced, please can you tell me, have you run after some devotees or... Yes, devotees, because I want to ask specifically for ISKCON, that are misusing this... fact that atmosphere in temple is dependent on woman. Like, for example, if something is wrong in the temple, then the woman is to be blamed, and then there is no reason for something else to be put like a problem. Have you, in your experience, run into that?
See, this whole blaming thing is useless.
Mm-hmm.
Blaming is always bad. You know, blaming doesn't lead to anything. Just to point the finger at others and blame. Doesn't matter what the situation is, blaming is useless. Blaming will not bring any solutions. It's simply a result of false ego again. Oh, it's all their fault, it's not me. You know? As we said in the beginning, Vaishnavmüdes. Why is this happening to me? How am I contributing to the whole situation here? What can I improve to make it better? What is Krishna trying to teach me here? This is the Vaishnava mood. So blaming is always bad. Doesn't matter who blames who in what situation. Blaming doesn't lead to anything good. Huh? Of course, so much blaming is going on. Ugh. Everybody blames each other. We get away with this, you know, from this. Blaming is useless. Men blaming the women blaming the men. Useless. Both sides should understand their roles, you know, according to Krishna's system and play it, rather than just wasting time blaming each other. What's the good of that? You know, it's just an ego thing. Oh, it's your fault, I'm right, you're wrong. No, useless. No? Because that's usually what's going on. The women are blaming the men, saying, yes, you guys are not Krishna conscious enough. That's why we can't be humble towards you and submit to you. And the men blame the women and say, well, you're competing. You're not the auspicious source of energy, you know. So we can forever continue blaming each other. Nothing will come out of it, you know. But if both sides will start with themselves, and Prabhupada says it in many purports, you know, that the success of a marriage is in the hands of a woman because of her powerful energy. If she does the right thing, she will immediately get a response of the man. Immediately. If she knows all these secrets and she replies it, she will get. Immediately. Even when I was giving the course in South India, while I still was there, I had some of the husbands coming to me and saying, oh, Mataji, what did you do with my wife? You transformed her within 2 days. She is a different person. And then I was saying, yes, by the way, we also have a men's course. But then he was saying, oh, really? Okay. Yes, maybe I can learn something too. You know? But we women have to start. We have to start. Because of this energy we have, that we can conquer a man's heart and we can bring the very best out of him. You know? So, we have to start. For men, very difficult to start if a woman does not know these things, you know. See, if a woman is, a wife is dominant and controlling, a husband will feel very afraid to give her support and to give her emotional care, because he is afraid. It's almost for him, from his point of view, it's like feeding a snake or a scorpion. Then she will only get, you know, more powerful in her competitiveness. Right? Yes. That's why he becomes more neglectful, you know, because he doesn't understand this consciously. He just fears it subconsciously. And he's very afraid. That's why many men now are afraid to get married. Yes, it's a whole thing. Yes. Even when I was this year in Mayapur and I took a taxi out to Ekachakra to prepare the Holy Name retreat there, my taxi driver was a young fellow from Mayapur there, you know, from the village, and he spoke a bit of English. And he was tired, so I thought, all right, let me talk to him and keep him awake here so he doesn't crash against a tree. And I asked him, so are you married? And he said, no. And he said, so difficult to find a good wife now. Yes, he was saying, you know, oh, all the women behaving so bad, so difficult. And he was even, you know, giving a whole talk about the ISKCON women and saying how they're dressing and, oh, so embarrassing, you know, just some village boy, you know. That's how we look like to the local villagers there, you know. Of course, not all women, but enough women to give this impression, you know. And I said to him, go to Bangladesh, there you will find a traditional good wife. And he was laughing, saying, yes, my friends told me also I should go to Bangladesh and find one there, you know. Yes, so even in India, you know. Yes, even in India. One funny little story I have to tell you. I was once in Crimea, in Simferopol, some years ago, when it was still part of Ukraine, now it's part of Russia. And there's one Maliji, she has her Kami work. She works in an office which arranges foreign men for Ukrainian wives, women, women. So I don't even know why, but for some reason I thought, I wonder from which part of the world her customers are, which men come to Ukraine to look for a wife. And I thought, oh, maybe from Scandinavia, there's so many isolated areas there, maybe the men can't find a wife there. So I asked her, from which country your customers are? From maybe Scandinavia? She said, no, from America. And I said, oh, really? Well, why is that? The American men, they don't want to get, the American women don't want to get married? And she gave a very interesting answer. That was even before I put this course together. That's about 10 years ago or something, you know? Already then I was always investigating and searching and observing. And then she said, no, the American women want to get married, but the American men, they are sick and tired of the American women who are competing. That was her answer, exactly like that. And I was speechless. I thought, wow, isn't that amazing? You know, even the non-devotee men, they intuitively feel, you know, they don't not have this knowledge, but they feel, no, these American women who always want to compete and know everything better, and, you know, no, they don't want to invite, you know, that into their life, you know. So that's why they go to Ukraine to try and find a more traditional wife who knows how to play her role as auspicious of serenity, you know. There's a whole list of the top 10 countries where men go to find a wife. You know, it's all the eastern countries. Poland, Ukraine, Russia, then further eastern. I don't know, maybe Slovenia, Croatia is also there, I don't know. But maybe it's already a little towards the west here, you know. So yes, the more east you go, the more you will find that the spiritual culture is still there, more, you know. And of course, from a materialistic woman's point of view, she thinks, ah, these men, they're all macho, they just want a cook and cleaner and some slave, you know. They see it all with very mundane eyes because they don't understand this whole energetic thing there, you know. No, it's not for them that they want a cook and cleaner, but they want a woman who knows how to be a little submissive and to play that role where they can be the hero. You see? Yes. You're very persistent, you know? Okay, quick. Let me see.
I can understand why someone needs a husband or a wife. I can understand.
You cannot?
No.
I'll explain you another time.
Maybe because of incarnation.
I'll explain you another time.
Because I think if I'll become a sannyasi guru or something like that, I'll have family in Krishna consciousness. I hate sex, I don't like children, because I got some, fulfillment in my life and everything I need.
Just as one little comment, a sannyasi would never hate children.
I don't like.
Well, let me understand, let me explain, you know, a person who has spiritual vision does not see the outside body, but he sees there is a little Vaishnava in that body.
I don't.
Well, that might be the problem, you know? Maybe. You know? So, and I tell you frankly, for many years also, children were not much part of my life too. But then I started realizing, you know, that actually I was also a child some time ago, you know, and this child will sooner or later be a grown-up person, And especially all those children who take birth in devotee families, they continue from previous lifetime. They're very special souls. You see? So they deserve all attention, all care, all respect. I've learned all these things in Bangladesh.
Yes.
And that really changed my whole attitude towards children.
Yes.
So many things to learn.
You're Gyani.
No, not Gyani. Hopefully not. Okay, so if there's no more points.
Sorry.
Yes, okay, two more points. Yes.
Pa zapravo meni se čini da čak i među bahtama u iskonu je zapravo najveći problem što je Mataji cijelo vrijeme propovijeda zapravo podržavanje žena kao majki. Ne kao majki u smislu da imaju djecu, nego čisto o njenoj službi, o darmi. Zapravo zbog čega ona rođena ne mora imati djete da bude majka.
Misliš da je to problem, da se to ne događa u iskonu?
Pa zapravo se ne podržava to, zapravo ne uči se ovako detaljno kao što nam Mataji govori to.
Okay. It seems to me that the main problem, even inside of iskon, is that we are lacking kind of care for women as mothers.
Support.
We don't give support to women as mothers. Just da ne dajemo podršku ženi kao majci.
Da, kao to je njena darma, ne to je njen položaj, bez obzira da ona
bila ili ne. Because it is her position, no matter that, if she has children or not.
Very true, very true. The mothers are the most important personalities in human society. The physical mothers and the spiritual mothers. Very true. And because they're so important, that's why I also feel that that understanding, that importance of mother has to be re-established in ISKCON. That's why, when was it? 22nd of February. I made some little humble attempt there in Mayapur, and we had a program celebrating the glories of our mothers.
Yes.
There is, at the moment, there is an article on Dandavats about it, and on my website there is also, you can see the recording of the whole program as a video. 2-hour video. I mean, it was not, you know, huge, but it had some little impact. Unfortunately, the time was not perfect. It was on the first day of Navadvip Mandala Parikrama, and of course most people go on Parikrama. But I wanted Shivaram Swami there as the main speaker, and that was the only time when he was available. So we built a whole big pandal there, on the first floor of the Goshala building there, you know, where they usually have the yagyas and weddings and so on. We covered it all with a pandal just for a 3-hour program, you know, with fancy flower decoration, big banner celebrating the glories of our mothers, Institute for Spiritual Culture, the stage, and, you know, Shivaram Swami was there, Bhakti Purushottam Swami, Smita Krishna Swami was speaking, and who else? Sanamuni Swami was there, yes, yes. And he already gave the morning Bhagavatam class in connection, you know, with this topic, and he spoke very nicely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and then there was some role plays. Yeah, you should watch it, it's quite funny. I had my voice broken, you know, so I could not, unfortunately, I could not get too involved there. I just gave the last 3 minutes, I said something, you know, to close it off. And especially the men's role play, you know, from the men's course, who did the same course basically, they did a very nice role play. Even though we had a few testing moments there too, they forgot their lines, you know, we were practicing so often. And I said to them, just make a little paper, just keep it in the pocket, and if you don't know, just get the paper. What's the big deal? No, no, we don't need it. No, no, no. So then they were, you know, I couldn't remember, and I was there whispering, trying to help them. But it was very sweet, you know, and very powerful. They were playing a role play, showing the importance of spiritual mother. So the scenario was some boys in a boys' ashram, a traveling preacher comes, and then the question is, oh, who's coming? And then one boy says, Yashoda Prabhu. And then the other boy, Yashoda Prabhu? Isn't it Yashoda Madhuji? And then another boy answers, yes, it's Yashoda Madhuji. Mother is always master, but she's so much more than master. You know? So, and then she arrived, one man was dressed up in white, you know. He folded his dhoti differently and covered it, you know. He was the Madhuji. And then everybody came running, oh, Madhuji, nice to see you. And they were all paying obeisances, taking the bag. And then, you know, one boy was saying, so you will be giving some classes? And then he says, yes, why not? If your Guru Maharaj allows. And then the other boy says, yes, of course he will allow. Our Guru Maharaj is our father, and you are our mother. And mother, more important. This is actually what one boy in Bangladesh said to me once. You know, I kind of put the script together, and I wanted to put that in. Because this happened to me once, that one boy said to me, and he took sannyas now, so, you know, he is a senior devotee, he's not just some village boy or something. He said this to me, he said, you know, Maharaji, our Guru Maharaj is our father, and you are our mother, and mother more important. And I was a little surprised, you know, and I said, really, more important? And then he put his hand on his heart and said, yes, mother, more affection.
Yes.
So they played that in the role play. And then it ended like, you know, every one of the boys was saying, yes, mother means I am last. Everybody else comes first. Mother's mood. And then another boy says, yes, mother means no showing off, no sexual vibes, vibrations, no vibes, he's saying this. And then another boy says, yes, mother is the, what was it? The balancing and harmonizing force. And then mother is safe, selfless caregiver. And then they all stood up and shouted out in the audience, when, oh when, will the day come when ISKCON has thousands of caring mothers coming from man's mouth? You know? Yeah, it was pretty powerful, you know. Yeah, so we are working on it, you know. But
ja nisam dugo u procesu, ali evo zadnjih 12 godina zapravo, zapravo zadnjih par godina se zapravo dešava taj pritisak kada se osjeti ta velika promjena, kada čak mi žene u svojim tijelima zapravo budu uvrijeđene, kada ih se zove majkama, zapravo to je njihov prirodni položaj. A to zapravo čak i neki guruji podržavaju sa tim Prabhu i ladies.
I noticed that in last couple of years, women are get offended if they call them mothers, and even some gurus are supporting this, calling Prabhu and so on.
We'll get to that later. We have a topic, how to address women.
Then
we'll look at it.
Okay.
Yes. You wanted to.
Yeah, just from this Chanakya Pandit's quote, what does it mean more that
daring.
She's not courageous.
No, daring, yes, is it's kind of bold, you know? Yes.
In an impolite way.
No, not necessarily. I don't understand it in an impolite way. It's simply daring, you know? Mothers jumping into the Ganges to save their child or something, you know? Yes, yes. Okay, ladies, let's move on to lesson number 3. Are you still able to assimilate more here? Yes? Lesson 3, yes. Yeah.
E, volim pohvaliti ovu djecu, najbolja do sad. Najmirniji. Children are very good, very stand still and very good behavior.
Because they know you like them so much.
Malo ih ima. Vi trebate Hrvatsko, tako? A možete skupo imati.
Well, I'm glad you can laugh about my jokes. I'm glad you can laugh about my jokes.
I like your ice glaze from Germany.
What do you like?
Something, I like your, you got something like ice. Maybe it's serious.
I'm very serious. That's good, I'm glad. Thank you.
I like it because for me the knowledge is a very serious thing.
Mm.
Okay,
good. Okay, we all have our materials. Ready, ready, ready. Yes, we are ready. Not enough creation.
Just investigating.
Okay, how is that? Well, maybe somebody can take in English or what? Yes. So, are we ready?
Yes.
Okay, so, topic is two kinds of women's beauty. Okay. Actually, some 10 years ago, I took my mother to Germany, and this was one of her first realizations. Huh?
Isn't she from Germany?
Oh, sorry, to India. To India. Sorry. Yes. Thank you. I took my mother to India. To Mayapur and Vrindavan, and her very first realization was the women in India, they have a different kind of beauty. Their beauty is not like the Western beauty, agitating and, you know, provocative and all this, but it's a different kind of beauty. That was her first observation after the first few hours when she landed in India. And I thought that was pretty remarkable for a person who does not even practice Krishna consciousness, you know, as such. So, well, I mean, very clear, you know, we discussed first day, we established the spiritual culture, materialistic culture, opposite worldview, you know, different fashion, and. So obviously, there has to be two kinds of beauties, right? Very clear. And I mean, understanding that in materialistic culture, success of a woman is actually, how do you say, is judged according to how many men she can agitate. Actually, isn't it? Yeah. Because, you know, sense gratification is the goal in life. Sex life is the topmost enjoyment, so naturally a woman who can attract and bewilder men, she is considered successful. Huh? Yes, of course. That propaganda is all there. You know, like Marge was saying yesterday morning, I think it was. No, this morning? This morning? Yesterday morning? This morning? I've mixed up already. Yesterday morning we didn't hear class. Yes. See, I'm already feeling like I've been a week here, you know. So yes, this morning he was saying, you know, this advertisement is always connected with some young, beautiful woman, you know, with Photoshop, all the wrinkles taken away, and. So, you know, that promotion is very strong, you know, that propaganda. To be, you know, agitating to the opposite gender, to be appealing, to be attractive, and, you know, you buy it with everything, you know, there's this subtle thing there that, yes, if you buy this tool or this car, then you get this beautiful woman to go with it, basically, you know, this is always there, you know. I also remember once I was sitting in the plane and I was looking at a newspaper and it was Marilyn Monroe's disappearance day. You all know Marilyn Monroe. And I was thinking, okay, let's have a look, you know, at the glorifications, at the homages to Marilyn Monroe. Newspaper was full of it. And there was one glorification. Marilyn Monroe was the most lusty woman in the world.
Yes.
A materialist thinks lusty is actually a good quality. Yes. He tried to glorify her as the most lusty woman in the world. And, you know, she, in her days, she was like the, you know, role model for a successful woman, you know? Yeah, so let's collect the criteria for material beauty. What is it based on? Yes, body. So, and therefore, what is it? Very external, superficial, simply offering sense gratification, all based on bodily attraction, basically agitating, disturbing the mind of men, feeding the fever of lust. This is material beauty. This is what it's all about. You know? Yes. Interesting, It does not only feed the fever of lusty desires in men, but also in women as well. You know? A materially beautiful woman, why is her beauty feeding lusty desires in a woman? Who can explain? Yes, yes, the whole competitive thing there, you know? Yes, yes. Sometimes women have told me this, they have said, I'm actually not dressing up for men, but for other women. Right? Because there's this whole competitiveness there, who is more attractive, you know, who wins the race there. Yes. So that's why it feeds also the lusty desires in a woman. You know, she starts thinking, oh, look at her, how she walks around, okay, well, how can I keep up with this, you know? And in a subtle way, it is also going on amongst ladies in Krishna consciousness. Oh, what sari has she got? Okay, where did you get that from? And okay, and you know, checking out her earrings, matching to the sari, and this, that, you know. And the mind is wandering and competing there, you know, often very unconscious. We're not even aware of it, you know. But it's going on.
Marilyn was very unhappy.
Just seeing what materialistic beauty is doing. In Amrita Vani, this is a very nice book by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says also a strong thing. He says, wearing opulent clothing is more harmful to others than eating palatable foods. You know, if we eat too opulent food, we harm ourselves. But wearing opulent clothing is not only harming to our consciousness, but also to other people's consciousness. And then he explains more. When we dress attractively here meaning over the top, too much, you know, right? Too opulent. When we dress attractively, we draw others' eyes to ourselves. That's why we're doing it, because we want to attract attention. The purpose of gorgeous dress is to distract people's minds and eyes from Lord Hari's worship. Right? You understand? So, in other words, when we dress too opulently, we are actually competing there with Srimati Radharani, you know, and Krishna. Instead of that everybody looks at them, we want that people look at us. You see, we compete. Yes. But this is only for, you know, extravagant dressing. You know, it's, of course, we should dress nicely and so on, you know, but extravagant dressing. One interesting thing, when I gave that course in India, some ladies were sharing with me that they still have this culture that really going to the temple, you dress nicely, but not so extravagantly. But this extravagant dressing people do when they go to a wedding. Yeah, right? I was making that comment saying, yes, I mean, here obviously in your yatra, nobody is dressing so extravagantly. And then one lady was saying from the audience, she was saying, yes, because we are going to the temple, you should attend a marriage ceremony. There you will see extravagant dressing. You know? So people in India, they still differentiate between those functions. That culture is still there, that when you go to the temple, you don't want to attract attention to yourself. And all right, weddings, there you, everybody can really dress up, you know, but to the temple is the wrong place to do that, you know. But we don't really have this understanding, And I mean, most yatras have some people who really like to dress extravagantly, you know, and attract attention. Many yatras have. So yeah, that part of the culture is kind of missing here in our this part of the world, you know, that yes, this extravagant dressing should not happen at the temple. Even not on Janmashtami or this or that, you know, wrong place, you know, but in India there's still that understanding is still there, you know. So in any case, obviously this materialistic beauty, this leads to degradation, you know, and to contamination, very clear, because it's simply heating and agitating the mind and feeding the fever of lust. So now, what's spiritual beauty based upon?
On virtues and character.
Virtues and character.
Good character.
Okay. Do we have? You got the materials? No. Why not? Come on. Yeah, give her everything. Second and third. Yes, virtue, character. What else? What's the basic foundation?
Empathy.
What's the don't just call out, please. Just lift your hand. Okay. So what's the foundation to spiritual beauty?
She says,
chastity. Yes, chastity, very true.
Devotion.
And?
Spiritual advancement.
Meaning?
So connection with
purity. Purity. Yes. But chastity is also pretty good. We come to that tomorrow. Yes. Actually, the soul by nature is all attractive. It is all beautiful. You see? Krishna is all attractive. As we become a little bit more and more Krishna conscious, then the natural beauty of the soul shines through. That's real beauty. Huh? So spiritual beauty is based on purity. That the natural beauty of the soul comes out. It is only covered, you know, through contamination, you know. And as we become more and more Krishna conscious, all this contamination is removed and the beauty of the soul comes out. Right? So it is a very different kind of beauty, very different, based on chastity and based on purity.
Mm?
And spiritual beauty is cooling for the mind and senses, reducing the fever of lusty desires. It is uplifting spiritual beauty, you know, very, very cooling. In the marriage and spiritual culture, there's one quote where it says how the, you know, a wife, if she dresses herself nicely, how she helps her husband to be sober and think nicely about his family responsibilities. Yes, it uplifts the consciousness and is cooling and sobering and inspiring him, you know? Yes. Satisfies that desire on a subtle and higher level, you know? Yes. We have two nice little quotes here. 10:13:51. All living entities are serving Krishna in different ways, but when they are Krishna conscious, their service is fully manifest. As a flower in the bud gradually fructifies and yields its desired aroma and beauty. So when a living entity comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness, the beauty of his real form comes into full blossom. That is the ultimate beauty and the ultimate fulfillment of desire. Very nice. Yes. We have this analogy there of a flower, you know. When a flower gradually, you know, blossoms and the real beauty and the real aroma comes out, she becomes very, very beautiful. And that's what's happening when a living entity becomes Krishna conscious. Then his full beauty resting on his relationship with the Lord comes to full blossom. Yeah? Very nice. Very profound. That this is actually true beauty.
Yeah?
And materialistic beauty is just like the perverted reflection of this. Yeah? Yes. There's another one, 10.20.13. As all creatures of the land and water took advantage of the newly fallen rainwater, their forms became attractive and pleasing. Just as a devotee becomes beautiful by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord. And we have the purport. We have practical experience of this with our students in the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. Before becoming students, they were dirty looking, although they had naturally beautiful personal features. But due to having no information of Krishna consciousness, they appeared very dirty and wretched. Since they have taken to Krishna consciousness, their health has improved, and by following the rules and regulations, they have increased their bodily luster. When they are dressed with saffron-colored cloth, with tilak on their foreheads, and beads in their hands and on their necks, they look exactly as if they have come directly from Vaikuntha. Very famous purport. Yeah, so again, very nicely describing, you know, how this true beauty, ultimately coming from the soul, comes shining through as we become more and more Krishna conscious. Yes, that's the spiritual beauty. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we do want to go a little bit more through a few little details about wearing the sari. Even though usually I don't really go much into details, but you know, no harm to talk about a few little aspects since it is so relevant and so practical. As we said yesterday, sari is the transcendental fashion, the topmost transcendental fashion. Yeah. Actually, it's also just so practical, you know, in a sense that it fits everyone at all times. Doesn't matter whether you put on 10 kilos or you lose 10 kilos, sari always fits. Whether you're pregnant, whether you're tall, whether you're short, it always fits. Very practical. Yeah? You don't have to buy new clothes all the time, like, you know, with materialistic fashion, you know? But no, it always fits, you know. Keeps all parts of the body perfectly covered in such an elegant way, actually. It's quite funny, you know. I don't know if you have been recently to Vrindavan. When you go to Vrindavan these days, so often you see these Indian ladies squeezing themselves into jeans, you know, and often their bodies are just not designed for jeans, you know? They're just not, you know? They have these big hips And it looks so ugly in these jeans. Oh my God, you know? And I'm always thinking, God, if she just had a sari on, you know, sari just covers it all so nicely, you know? And it still looks so elegant and beautiful, you know? But no, it has to be the jeans, you know? And then the big backsides there, you know? Oh my God, you know? Yeah, it's really grotesque, you know? The Indian women start more and more wearing non-devotional clothes, and here we are coming from Germany and wherever not, and we are wearing the saris, you know? Really upside down, you know? Yeah, so that's really what you can see in India. Even if people are completely fat, but if they wear a sari, it still looks nice and elegant. It does, you know? Yeah, very nice design, you know? And as we said, reduces bodily consciousness. You know, I remember even before I met the devotees, I was often suffering under this whole social pressure what to wear, you know? As non-devotee, there's so much social pressure there. Whenever you go somewhere, you go to a party or this or that, oh, what to wear, so people don't look up and down on you, people accept you, you know. It's such a headache, actually. Such a social pressure, you know. Yes, yes. Whole ego thing. I have these rich relatives there in Germany. They wear jumpers which cost 1,000 euros. Just all name brands, you know. And if they want to go to some parties, they have to have such clothing. Otherwise, they fear they can't even appear there, you know? This is how this whole mental pressure is building up and, you know, causing people to waste their money in such ridiculous ways, you know? Yes, yes. And I always had this theory, there must be one way of dressing where you're always appropriately dressed, you know? I was really looking for this way of dressing, and then, oh, yes, here it is, the sari, thank God, you know? You're always nicely dressed, doesn't matter to for what occasion, you know? It's just perfect, you know? So, but as we were mentioning yesterday, if we really want to, we can make turn the sari into the fashion in the mode of passion, if we really want to, right? It is possible, right? Let us quickly collect in a very practical way here. How do we wear a sari in order to turn it into materialistic fashion, fashion in the mode of passion? Yes, so first of all, very high chollies, very low sari. So low. Not covered the head. And what else?
Loose hair also.
Transparent, yes. Yes, or sometimes, you know, the gopi skirt. First it starts sari, gopi skirt, then gopi skirt. The veil is just some flimsy little see-through chadar there, you know, some little scarf. I mean, I've seen women coming like this to Mangalati in Mayapur with a petticoat and a little trolley and just some little see-through scarf, you know. Yes, yes. These things are going on even in Mayapur. And I went up to her, I said to her, sorry, I think you're not properly dressed. You haven't finished. Something is missing. Well, somebody has to tell them, you know. I mean, you can't just, you know, go along with this and nobody says anything, you know, just out of fear not to offend her or something. Come on, you know. Yes, yeah, I always send her back to her room, you know, to get dressed properly, you know. Yeah, I mean, come on, you know. Yeah, but these things are all going on. And then what else? There's a few more versions.
Paint.
Yeah. There's this new way of pinning the sari, you know, that it is goes like this, you know, and the cholli, of course, is lower cut there, you know, and this whole part, this décolleté, is completely free, you know, yeah. Oh, it's coming in everywhere. Yes. Maybe not so much in this part of the world, but in many parts of the world.
Whoever came from Maya for from the festival, that's the latest fashion. It's coming from there.
Yeah.
Whoever was on the festival and who is receptible for these new fashions.
Yeah, no, but it doesn't come from Mayapur as such. I don't want to mention any yatras, not to offend anybody, but it's taken from other yatras to Mayapur, and then there it's distributed to the whole world like that, more, you know? Yes. And then there's another thing. I mean, also, you know, the whole manufacturing industry is also going along with this. You know? What changes do we find there? Cholli, yes. You know, these trolleys, which are really low in the back, there's a little string there, you know, right? You know those trolleys? Little string. You know? Yes, in the back they are holding it together, just some string there, you know? Yes, and then the half the back is free, you know? Yes, well now you can even get sleeveless trolleys. You know, already, you know, it's wandering up there, you know, it's going to be soon with these spaghetti things, there, you know, we call them, you know, in German we call them spaghetti, you know, just like, you know what I mean. So let us understand man's psychology. What goes on in the man's mind, you know? And in order to understand that, I want to describe quickly the basis of sense gratification. Sense gratification, the desire for sense gratification, actually happens on the level of the mind. The mind is hoping and expecting for some kind of satisfaction which actually never comes. This is Bhagavatam. There's a verse in the Bhagavatam which says that sense gratification is just a concoction of the mind. We are hoping and have an intense expectation of a certain satisfaction which actually never comes. Even like, let's say we are planning a holiday in Australia, and we read up, yes, Australia, oh, these islands and that, and oh, we are planning, we are having some expectation for some amazing enjoyment there. It's all happening in the mind, we are planning it all and hoping it for it and this and that. And then when we go there, we will not get it. Then this thing happens and that thing happens and the mosquitoes and it all goes differently, right? And then we simply think, ah, this time we didn't get it, but next time, right? So the same thing is, of course, also going on in this whole man-woman relationship, this whole sex business. It is based on an intense expectation of getting some kind of satisfaction which actually never comes. It's like this carrot which the donkey has there, tied upon a stick there in front of his nose, and he's always thinking, oh, soon I'm going to get it. Let me just run a little faster, you know? And the carrot is always moving ahead of him, and he never catches it, right? That's the principle of sense gratification. It's really happening on the mental platform. So now, once we understand this, let us be a little blunt here. Let us be, you know, to the point, what is happening in the man's mind? Understanding that their agitation mainly comes through the eyes. So, if they see somebody wearing a sari very low, then the man's mind says, I wonder what is there a little lower. Let's pull a little lower. I want to see what is there. Right? Or Lanka décolleté. I wonder what is there a little lower. Please, let's pull a little lower there. I want to see. Right? That's agitating. Yes, it's feeling the fever of lust immensely. One Mataji was telling me that her husband told her, never wear see-through cloth. It drives men mad. Because see-through means, you know, transparent. You can see something, but not everything. And that's what drives a man crazy. Yes. That's much more agitating than seeing a naked woman. Oh, well, then the excitement is gone, you know. There she is. It's all there, you know. No more excitement. Yes. Yes, that's the principle on which lusty desires are fed in the man's mind, you know. It's good to understand, you know. So even with these trolleys there with a string, man's mind thinks, all I have to do is pull. You know? And what will happen then? That's what's going on in the man's mind. Yes, let's be clear on it. Or, you know, if a man sees only half a tattoo there, then he thinks, you know, let's get rid of this trolley there so I can see the rest of it. Yes, that's what's going on in the man's mind. Yes. And of course, the fashion designers, they know this very well. They study psychology to know all the tricks, how to feed people's lusty desires. They study it. Yes. And they design the fashion accordingly. You know, that's why we have these skirts. Oh my God, in India, this is coming in now with the Punjabi suits, you know. The Punjabi suits now, even in South India, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. You know, the normal Punjabi suits, which used to go far above the knee, and all right, there's a little cut like this until here maybe. This is all changed now. You know, the Punjabi suit, the pants are not the baggy pants anymore, but they're like leggings, completely tight. You have seen this? Yes. Completely tight. And then the top is becoming, first of all, shorter and shorter. You know? And on the side, up, right up to the waist. Yes. So when a woman walks, you know, you can see all up the leg and the backside, everything completely clear there because her pants are so tight. And that's how the women walk around in India now. You know? Yes. I mean, that this is going to cause reactions is pretty clear, you know. Yes.
And rape very often.
Yes, yes. This violence which we have had towards women in India, this is the global reaction to this. Yes, of course, it has to be. And it will increase, I can tell you, I can promise you. There will be so many horrible things happening. Because, you know, this is all coming into India. And the Indian women to take birth in India, very pious birth. Indian women, average, are very beautiful. Because it's a very pious birth. So if they lose, you know, their chastity, and they walk around like this, this is going to create havoc because the Indian men are not used to dealing with this. This only has happened in the last 5-6 years or something, you know.
In Muslim countries,
yeah, maybe, but so far it hasn't come to Bangladesh yet, but it's just a question of time, you know. Yes. Yeah, so that's the thing, you know. I mean, I'm always perplexed. How can people walk around like this in India? I mean, I would feel so embarrassed, you know. My God, you know. But yeah, you see it everywhere, even South India, Coimbatore, which is very much in the south. Yeah, so these things are going on, And so, of course, men get completely agitated. They see these women's legs, they're right up to the top, And that feeds the fever of lust. So that's the point, If we really want to, we can even transform the most transcendental fashion in the most, lusty fashion, if we really want to. I remember I once had an assistant with me, and she had this way of pinning the sari like this, And I have to admit it, I'm pretty perceptive to subtleties, and it really annoys me when people are not properly dressed, especially when they are my assistants, But also when they're neglectfully dressed, when they're dirty and rags, sari hanging up to the knees, I can't tolerate it, Just tamaguna, Yes. So it does affect the consciousness of people around, So anyway, it was interesting, She was walking around like this, pinning the sari like that. And because I didn't know her much, I thought, all right, let me tolerate for a couple of weeks, and so on. But then at one stage I said to her, one thing, as long as you travel with me, please pin your sari a different way. While you're with me, just wear it like this. And it was amazing how it changed her whole aura. She was almost like a different person just by covering that front part nicely. Her whole energy was a different one. And she became actually so much more attractive, so much more beautiful, the spiritual beauty. Yes, I was shocked by seeing the difference, what difference it makes. And it was interesting, then later on when she then went back to her hometown, the other girls, they said to her, oh, you look different, you look so beautiful, what did you do? And then she told them, she said, oh yeah, Devaki Mataji told me I should wear. And they were all saying, I also want to become like this. They could feel the different energy, when a woman covers that part nicely, because this is also a very sensual part. That's why, when people wear a Punjabi suit, like traditionally, they don't cover their head with that piece, but they just cover it here in the front, right? I'm sure you have seen.
Yeah.
Makes all the difference when that front part is covered. It gives a whole different energy coming from that person. Yes. It's subtle, but it is so strongly there, Yes. I've got this last point here. Discuss the topic of women dancing in kirtan. I don't want to go too deeply in this, but just, going back to this quote with Vishwavasu falling out of his airplane when he saw Devahuti playing ball on the rooftop. When I read this purport first time more consciously, this was the thought that entered my mind. I thought, Devahuti, innocent, beautiful little Devahuti playing ball has such an effect. What to speak of our dancing? Right? That was immediately my thought. So, as I said, we're not going to establish here some rules, what a woman should do and not do, and should a woman dance or not dance? No, but it's simply a question of consciousness. That's the point. And we will get to this more tomorrow when we talk about chastity. But it is all a question of consciousness. As soon as we try and make some kind of a show there, you know, then of course, boo, women's energy flying out, you know? Yes, yes. And that, of course, easily happens in dancing. You know, and often we have that experience. I'm sure we all have been in such kirtans where, oh, the women having ecstatic symptoms there, and the breasts are flying, and this and that. And my God, you know? Yes, yes, and all in the name of kirtan. You know, it's all going on. Yes, it's transcendental. You know? Yes, yes, yes. So we have to be a little careful, you know, about our powerful feminine energy. That's all, you know. Yes, yes. But I would not personally, I would not like to go that far and say a woman cannot dance in the kirtan. I'm sorry. For my ears, it sounds like a bit too much bodily platform, you know? As soon as we make such rules, a woman cannot do this. No, no. Maybe, you know, we can say, well, unfortunately, hardly any of our women today know the deeper secrets of chastity, what it actually means. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. Yes, and therefore maybe, you know, let's not dance too wildly or something, or maybe at the moment there should not dance. But anyway, everybody's got a personal mood and attitude and so on, but I personally am not, you know, fond of such a rule. Like this morning, we were dancing quite nicely, you know, no problem. If we have the right mood and attitude and consciousness, and we don't try and make a show there, and the same is for the men too, they also know, you know, they often also make a show. And it's just a different way of doing it, you know, all crazy things and jumping around there like some crazy person or something, you know. So, no, the point is not to make a show. That's the point, you know. And also this dancing I usually discuss more in the Holy Name retreat. So one day you have to come and join that somewhere. Yes.
Maybe this subtle aspect, I've seen sometimes that women, you know, like hold a little bit just the sari. Does it also, you know, have an effect on man's mind?
You know, hold the sari?
Yeah.
If it's too long.
No, it's not too long, but just for dancing somehow like this, you know?
then... See, we have to understand, it's not so much the topic what a woman is doing, but how is she doing, with which consciousness, that's the point. You know? So therefore, I don't like to make these rules. A woman should do this, a woman cannot do this. No, 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 no. Shallow understanding in my eyes. You know, we have to go deeper. We have to see what consciousness. Can you give me some room? In what consciousness is she doing things? You know? And if the consciousness is right, then it will be fine. You know? But it's a fact, like from Bangladesh, I also know that the ladies are very reserved. You know, they don't, you know, dance and jump around, you know, like crazy. They're very reserved, you know? Yes. Yes. And I mean, that there have been, you know, incidences in Mayapur and the Kirtan Mela where our ladies are dancing so provocatively that, wow, you know, Yeah, the Bengalis, the Bangladeshis, they really complained, you know. So we also just said, what is this? You Western women, you are dancing like this. We don't do these things, you know. Yes, yes. Yes, and once you get a bit more perceptive, you can really feel the contamination coming through this showing up. You know, you can feel the whole atmosphere by the power of the feminine energy, you know, gets contaminated. And there's this whole showing off thing, you know. Yes.
I wanted to ask about women dancing in Harinam or in front of Ratha Yatra.
Yes.
Often it is said, you know, I've experienced that serious devotees told us in front, while he was pulling the Ratha Yatra, go dance, dance, go dance. And then we, you know, like 20 of us, you know, and we were first, you know. First we were dancing and then was Ratha Yatra.
Well, what can I say? Obviously, there's a lack of deeper understanding of culture, of spiritual culture.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the problem.
Because, like, it's that will attract people.
Purity is the force. The Holy Name is all attractive. We possibly cannot make the Holy Name more attractive through our dancing. Not possible. It is all attractive. And if we chant purely, that's what attracts. If we try and attract people simply on this material thing of making a show, I mean, the materialists are much more expert in making shows. You know? We cannot compete with that, and we don't want to compete with that. We want to offer something different. And I want to share one thing with you, which is a pretty shocking thing. We have a Kirtan committee in ISKCON, where senior personalities got together to try and make sure that kirtan does not degrade into some musical performance. Huh? And I was once having a meeting with them, telling them my concerns about this topic of dancing. You know, because I'm thinking sometimes the men, they don't really realize, because they're not there with the women, and, you know, they maybe they're just not observant enough to understand, you know, that this is not what we really want, you know, this whole showing off thing there, you know. So I was inviting them in Mayapur to my place and having a meeting with them. So in one of the members of this committee, he's married to a Russian lady, and she was there in the meeting, and she made this comment saying that in one temple, I won't say which one, in one temple in Russia, one lady wrote her an email being a little concerned about one notice on the notice board. And this notice on the notice board said, we are looking for ladies to join the Harinam, and they should have the following three measurements. The following three parameters. You know? Breast, waist, bum. The classic three parameters to measure a woman's beauty. Such a notice was on the notice board.
Yes.
So I was very happy when she told me this, because it really confirmed my concern. Where are we going? Where are we going? What is this? You know? Yes, yes. Serious thing.
Yeah.
And I have to also share that once I attended a Rath Yatra, again I won't tell where it was. Before I went to the Rath Yatra, I had a whole meeting with some nice ladies and we were reading the Rath Yatra pastime there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And oh, I was also charged, all right, let's go on the Rath Yatra. And then, oh no, you know, oh, there was this whole parade there of ladies leading up, you know, the dancing in front of the cart. They all looked like Miss Universe or something, you know, all with this piercing in the belly button there and the sari worn like this that everybody could see. And oh my God, you know, you could see it was the body show there of the year, you know, this was Rath Yatra. And then I saw the man there, you know, taking the close-up shots there of all the different parts of the women's bodies. Nobody was looking at the deities, you know. I just couldn't tolerate it. I just went back to my room. I just, oh no, no, no. I just couldn't tolerate it. You know? I was so pained and depressed almost, you know. My God, what is this? Yes. Yeah, so we have to be careful, you know. We have to be careful. Like in Ukraine, thank God they made a rule now. Achyuta Priyapu, the regional secretary, made a rule that on Harinams, it's not the women dancing in the front, but they are in the back. How it used to be. Yes. Yes. Because also, let's imagine the poor brahmacharis having these women in front of them. You know, nobody covers their head, low cholly there with strings pulling, you know, and the tattoos, and my God, you know. You know? How will they be happy there on the Harinam chanting the holy name, you know? Yes. Yes. So, yes, thank God Achyuta Priyapuru took this up. And, yeah, he made some changes, you know? And this is not allowed to go on anymore. But the boys are in the front, so then the ladies come, and then one Grihastha man or something can be in the back for protection so the women don't get harassed or attacked or something, you know. Yeah, but that's how it used to be for so many years. You know? Yeah. Anyway, that's all I want to comment on this topic. But, you know, let's be clear. Ultimately, it is, you know, a question of getting a deeper understanding, you know. And that's why also the men have to take these courses. They have to understand there's two different kinds of beauty here. Which kind of beauty do we want to cultivate and, you know, and show, you know? Yes. Serious topic, you know. Otherwise, the whole process of chanting just gets watered down like anything. It does. It does. One funny story I want to share. I was in one yatra going on Harinam with the devotees. And one Mataji asked me, oh, can I take my little Prabhupada Murti along? And I said, all right, yes, why not? First I thought, shall I really say yes? All right, let her take it along. So then everybody came, meeting in the city for the Harinam. So then the big discussion was, well, where is Prabhupada going? So, and then they asked me. And I said, well, if you ask me. I first thought, okay, let them work it out, let them discuss, you know. I was just quiet, waiting, you know. So then they came to me, Mataji, what do you think? Where should Prabhupada go? And I said, well, usually on Harinam, Prabhupada likes to be in the front. Right? And, well, usually, I think Prabhupada would like to be carried by a man, not by the Matajis. So, and then there was confusion. Well, but we have the tradition, in those times it was still the tradition that the women go in the front. So, then there was a big confusion, and I said, well, you are asking me, and I said, you know, so you decide, you are the Holy Land leader, you work it out. You know? So again, there was big discussion. And then they decided, all right, let the men go in the front carrying Prabhupada, let the women go in the back. And I thought, just see, when Prabhupada is there, then we know how to behave. Then we know what's right and what's wrong. You know? Yes. But when Prabhupada is not there, when we are not conscious of Prabhupada, then all kinds of ideas are coming in. In the name of preaching, in the name of attracting. You know? Yes. Yes, and I was really thinking, wow, isn't that amazing? You know? As soon as Prabhupada is there, everything falls into place. Okay, ladies, 6:10.
Question here.
Yeah.
May I just ask you just something?
Okay.
I'm sorry that I came late because I didn't know. I thought it's starting at 5, it was written on the computer.
We haven't changed it on the website.
Yeah.
The first
was
last at 5.
What a shame, because we had such important topics tonight.
While you were speaking about this, I'm just thinking of other things, not behaving in the community of the devotees, and it's very, you know, it has very much sense what you say, but I'm coming from an island, and I was raised there. I liked as a child to swim a lot. It was just my nature to be in the water. I'm like a fish in the water. So when I came to Krishna consciousness, for many years I wasn't taking bath. It's just, you know, because I didn't want to expose my, you know, bath and swim in the sea. Yeah. So, it was for me like, yeah, because I didn't want to expose my bath in front of everyone.
Okay.
So after some times I realized, no, it's just not what I want to be. I actually want to be what I am. And
yes.
I'm not swimming because of the exposing my body, but because I just like it very much. So after years, I would find beaches where nobody is there, and it was going on for some time. Like then when I got a child, then I had to go to the beaches where other people are, because this is where the children can, you know, it's just more practical for the child to be inside. So what I thought of myself, that I'm more on the bodily platform than all other tourists there, because I'm just thinking, oh no, I feel very uncomfortable there. You know, and everybody just looks at me, but no, they're not looking at me actually, I'm completely on bodily platform. So what would you suggest in that? I mean, for a Western,
I mean, I go swimming, but I don't go in a bikini or in a swimming suit. I just go in Punjabi pants and a t-shirt.
Yeah, but that would be exactly what they would look at. You know,
I don't care.
Who is going in a Punjabi?
I don't care at all. I just go swimming like that. What's the big deal?
The point is that when I'm in the suits but fits to the Western world, then they don't look at me. They really don't look at me. But if I take a bath in a pajama, then I'm in the middle of the
Well, see, the point is not whether people look at us or not, but the point is, and we will talk about that more tomorrow, the point is about chastity, about shyness. Yes.
So you should suggest that even in these teachers we take Punjabi and go.
Yes, of course. I've been doing it for 30 years.
I won't.
It's up to you. You've got the free choice.
Yeah, it's true.
But it puts yourself more on the bodily platform by, you know, having an exposed body. It makes a subtle effect on your own consciousness. We don't realize. We are not so perceptive usually, but it does make a difference. It does. See, the more mature and the more purified we become, the more perceptive we become to all these subtleties. And then we notice how it affects our own consciousness. It does, in a very subtle way. It's not a matter whether people look at me or not. That's not the matter. See, when, like 15 years ago, when I first was going to Bangladesh, there was practically no temple that had bathrooms. People in those times, they were taking baths on the public pump or in the pond. So, and when I was there as a Westerner, I had to take bath in public. The whole village was coming and watching to see that Western person who took bath. And they didn't even think anything lusty or something. They were so naive and childlike that it was just like instead of watching TV or something, they were just coming and watching. Oh wow, a Westerner here. Okay, let's sit down and watch. You know? And they were watching me from start to finish how I took baths with a Punjabi suit in public. So you get used to that, you know. But now, meanwhile, temples do have bathrooms. But that's how it was 15 years ago, you know. Very simple, very, very simple, you know. And that's how all the women there take baths. They all go with their petticoats and the pukuas there and the ponds and stuff, you know. That's the way to take bath. So the two cultures are like day and night. Let's say. This was also one of the first realizations for my mother when she came to India. She said, God, everything that's right in Germany is wrong in India. And whatever is right in India is wrong in Germany. It's like day and night. Yes. She immediately realized, you know, India, you sit on the floor, you eat with your hands, it's all wrong in Germany, you know. And taking bath too, you know. So, and here it's wrong, there it's right. So it's a personal thing of how much of which culture we want to put in our life. You know, whether we want to rather adjust to the materialistic culture, or whether we want to set something against it. You know. And spiritual culture is simply meant for our own upliftment. It's not there for nothing. It's Krishna's culture. It's there for a purpose. It's got a good reason. That's the point, you know? So we, you know, if we want to make progress, we have to accept Krishna's system, not thinking that our system is better than Krishna's system. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I heard that once in one creation camp, one Swami, one spiritual master saw a Mataji, and this spiritual master is very strict and very conservative. Yes. And he said this is the way that every Mataji should look like, and she was like very extravagantly dressed. And he's very, very, very strict, very, yeah.
I have a comment, because I know the situation. Uh-huh. Actually, she was not so extravagant. She has a makeup, like kajal and everything, and
lipstick,
and jewelry, jewelry, and nice sari, fancy sari, not like a cloth sari, kitchen sari.
Yes.
Like nice sari. Mm.
And she's very nice.
And she's very nice.
Yes.
So you know the situation. Okay.
I know the situation. She was covered, not like, you know, showing up, but decorated very nicely.
Yes.
No sari suits her.
Yes.
She's, you know, decorated woman, but not showing off.
And I wanted to ask about.
And he said that every woman should look like her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she was like wrinkling, and you know, because I'm asking about
what
this.
What was she?
Tickling with
tickling.
I mean, I wanted to ask
tinkling.
About
tinkling
about
jewelry.
Makeup and jewelry, because I in my karmic life, I was always with in men company, and I know they are very attracted to the jewelry and to the waist. And when they saw me in sari, they said, "This is very erotic because we see your waist, and you can be covered all over, but please." So, is it like subjective?
Well, see, often the way we actually wear the sari is not really how it is meant to be traditionally worn. You know, traditionally, we don't have on the side; it's all up here. But usually, it goes half the arm down, and as soon as you pull that down, then your waist is covered. Actually, you see, but we are not wearing it properly. You know, that's why I always like to have chadars. Without the chadar, I don't feel properly dressed. You know.
Makeup? What about makeup?
Well, I mean, this is all kind of part of the marriage and spiritual culture, but especially a married woman, there's so many quotes where Prabhupada says it's the duty of a married woman to make herself attractive for the husband. You know? But then he also says an unmarried woman, she should not be attractive like that. Yeah, there's one quote where Prabhupada even says an unmarried woman should not even comb her hair. He's making a whole comment how this hair combing is one of the favorite activities of women. And that actually, you know, an unmarried woman, she should not spend all this time with her hair, you know?
Sorry, can you repeat the thing with combing?
Combing.
When she does that, she what?
It's one of a woman's favorite activities.
Jedna od omiljenih djelatnosti žena je da se češljaju i onda ne udane.
Well, you know, making herself beautiful with all kinds of arrangements with her hair and so on. You know, yeah, I mean, we said yesterday, you know, women go to the hairdresser, how this hair fashion is very important usually for women, right? It is. Otherwise we wouldn't have so many hairdressers in the cities, you know, where people go every 6 weeks or something, you know. Yes. It is a pretty important part of women's life. I mean, supermarkets are full of hair care, you know, all the different shampoos and conditioners and this and that. I mean, come on, you know? So let's not deny that, huh? Yeah, so Prabhupada says, you know, definitely an unmarried woman should not give so much attention to the hair, you know, because she hasn't got a husband to make herself beautiful. That's the point.
It's better to have a handsome husband if you get to look nice, but no old and ugly.
Okay.
Because he's insecure.
Okay.
Sorry, this Mataji wants to know what about when husband is not there and the woman is like very nice with the rest?
Well, strictly speaking, when the husband is absent, when he goes somewhere 2-3 days or something, woman should keep herself very simple. I remember in the early days, women were wearing white with a border when the husband was away. Yeah. No jewelry, no makeup, plain. Then when he comes back, okay, then you can dress nicely to please him. You know? But that's all different course, you know, marriage and spiritual course. It's also a nice purport where Prabhupada says, you know, when the husband comes home, then the ladies dress up, they put flour in their hair just to please the husband. You know, it should be for the husband, not for other men, and not for other women, but for the husband. That's the chastity there, that she dresses up to please him and satisfy him, and nothing else.
story we were just speaking about when the women are really simple. We like to be simple, I mean, by nature. And the husband really likes that he has a very beautiful woman all the time.
Well, see, there's even a saying, not a devotee saying, but a non-devotee saying, we eat to please ourselves, we dress to please others. Have you heard that? Yes, we eat to please ourselves, we dress to please others. So it is a married woman's duty, whether she likes it or not. Because not liking, see, you have to understand, attachment and aversion are simply two sides of the same coin. So if a woman does not like to, you know, decorate herself, it's also some kind of attachment. It's not neutral. Yeah, so, but as a married woman, that's our duty. That's how we serve. We are meant to serve. And we dress to please others. We should be dressing with a mood of service. So, if we have that, it's very clear. Every husband likes to have a beautiful wife. So, that is how we serve, by making ourselves attractive and pleasing like that. It's so difficult to understand.
Ja sam samo htjela reći da tom Daršanu, možeš samo htjela se reći. Ja sam samo htjela reći da tom Daršanu koji Mataji priča, ona tad nije bila, to je bilo prije 15 godina.
To su meni rekli da. Kad sam ja pitala kako žena treba gledati.
Znači prije 15 godina je taj bio Daršan na kojem je to Vanraš govorio. Upravo se odnosilo na to. Znači to se odnosilo na izgled žene. Kad je muž prisutan za muža, isključivo to, i čak sam ja dobila instrukciju da bojam crveno dlanove i tabane, što ja nisam nikad od Maharaja prihvatila. Tad je to Maharaj rekao kao, trebaš čak bojati dlanove. Znači ja sam se počela šminkat tad, ali nisam na to pristala, na te dlanove crvene, to mi je bilo malo važno. Ali sam počela nositi nakit i šminkat se. I Maharaj mi je čak rekao da uvijek trebam ustati prije muža. Znači, nikad me muž ne može biti onako u pidžami, su ono, rašupan, nego uvijek moram ustati prije muža i moram ga dočekat ovako u sari odjevena, sređena.
She was the one who got this instruction, this comment from her guru. On a darshan about this is how every woman should look like.
Okay.
And this was an instruction like in the presence of the husband, for the husband, she should dress up like this.
Yes.
And he even commented that not just jewelry and nice sari, but she should also paint her hands in red.
Yes.
And another instruction was that she should never. She should always get up earlier than her husband and always greet him like this, nicely dressed up, not in
sari and like this, not in pyjama and...
Yes, yes. Well, it has a subtle effect on the consciousness, definitely. You know? Yes, definitely. Creates an auspicious atmosphere. Yes.
Ja sam pročitala knjigu Krišnabuku da se Krišna prije dizao nego njegova supruga.
I read in Krishna book that Krishna got up earlier than
anyway, let's not get lost in some details. Let's not get lost.
May I share my experience regarding that?
Yes.
I spent 2 months in Salem Temple in South India. And regarding ladies dancing, they went quite far to the other side, meaning that the ladies didn't even move during it, and they were just standing. And I adjusted, no one preached to me, but I just adjusted. And my experience was that there I learned how to dance inside for Krishna. You can dance wildly like anything and it doesn't show outside.
Yes. Very nice. Yes. Yes. I also had a similar experience when I was once in Tirupati for the GBC meetings. There was also the local women in the Prabhupada group, so they were really at the back, you know, really at the back. And some of the, you know, devotees present there from the GBC meetings, there was a bit of a heated discussion. Oh, the women are so in the back and they should be in the front and this and that, you know. But then when I looked at these ladies in the back, I saw how they were with heart and soul chanting the Guru Puja song along, you know, they were singing. And I really understood, yes, it's not the matter of where we stand in the Guru Puja, you know, whether we are in the front or the back. This, it's just all so external, you know, really external. Main thing is, what is going on in the heart during Guru Puja? And when we stand in the back, that actually forces us to connect on deeper levels. You know, if we want to have some satisfaction there being in the Guru Puja, if we are in the back, we are forced to go deeper, you know, and connect. Otherwise, we will not want to go. Right? We will get frustrated and will not want to go. And I realized, wow, it's actually a blessing, you know, to be in the back, because you're forced to connect on deeper levels, to get on deeper levels of your practice, you know, rather than just being in the front there, and, oh, here I am, you know. Of course, I'm not saying that if we are in the front, we can't connect. That's not the topic. But if we actually connect, we don't really care where we stand. That's the point. You see? Same thing or similar point also with leading kirtans. If we actually get on deeper levels of kirtan, we don't care whether we lead or somebody else leads. You know? As long as our main satisfaction comes from that, that I have to lead the kirtan, otherwise I'm not satisfied, well then obviously our satisfaction does not come from chanting the holy name, but it is some flickering ego satisfaction there, you know? That's all it is. And once we get on deeper levels of chanting, this whole topic of who leads will be completely, you know, unimportant. Yeah. Okay, 6:30. Let's quickly turn to the neighbor in chair. What did we learn in the afternoon session? What's the realization of the afternoon? Quickly, 2 minutes. Yeah, or you can share 3, 2, whatever you like. Yeah. So who is group three?
Who is?
Group three. What? Only two people? Can't be.
Oh no.
You're group number three?
No, she's one.
No.
So what are we going to do? Two people is not enough. Huh?
Maybe
somebody
magic.
Has to help.
I give help.
Yes? Okay. Anybody else wants to help?
I would like to help because I was number one, but I missed the morning class.
Oh.
And I have no idea how it should look like. So, but I'm willing to give him a try.
Okay, well, I leave it up to you. I leave it up to you. Group number three simply has the afternoon topic, which was the power of the feminine energy and two kinds of women's beauty. Pretty easy. Easy topic. Right? All we have to do is be our very self. No, but we should. Are you group number three?
No.
She's four.
Okay. So, but we should have again, you know, the materialistic beauty. Hey! Boy! What do you want? The materialistic beauty, and we finish with the spiritual beauty. We want to finish on the positive note. Right? Now the other thing is we are a little behind, you know. I was hoping that we would get further this afternoon, but somehow we didn't, you know. We got pretty stuck there with Harry now and this and that. But since the questions came up, I didn't want to brush them off. So what are we going to do? We still got so many important topics, and tomorrow's the last day. What time do you have to leave tomorrow? Huh? Six? Is it? Daylight. Seven? Well, I mean, I also don't know how much you can assimilate, you know? Or maybe we just have to come to terms that we won't manage everything. But the last session has also a few juicy topics there, you know? Yes. Are women less intelligent? You know, can women lead kirtan and give class? Can women be guru? You know, they are kind of pretty heated topics there.
What if we start, will it be too much? If it starts in the morning at 10 and till
2? 10 till 2, 4 hours with 10 minutes break?
No, 10 minutes.
With two
3 breaks.
Well, you think about it and you let me know tomorrow. I'm just your servant, so whatever you want me to do, I'm happy to do. As you like.
Does anyone have a problem starting at 10 and then see how it goes?
Yes, shall we start at 10 tomorrow?
Yeah, and see.
Okay. So then really breakfast has to be ready served at 9. Yeah, today was, the lunch was a little late, right, yeah, the breakfast was even earlier, yeah, good. So we'll try like that. And tomorrow you have Sunday feast, right?
Yes.
When is that served?
Actually, the program starts at 4, but the lunch is
5.
But the idea was when I was arranging for the seminar that we just go during the Sunday feast,
which
is
yes,
if Maharaj would have given a class, then we would have stopped before
okay.
6, but now
yes. But what about the lunch? There will be lunch for us at 2, right?
As far as I understood.
Yeah, it has to be. Otherwise, we don't have lunch.
Yeah.
All right, so then let's start at 10 tomorrow, and we'll see how we go. Okay, we'll start at 10 with a role play, group number 3. Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye. Devaki Mataji Ki Jai. 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 Jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai